Welcome to a new episode of Operation Gundog. We hope you enjoy it.
Back.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Operation Gundog. This is episode 17, and we're sitting here with Luke Kuer. And he's with Best Retrievers. If you guys haven't heard of him, he actually just won the SRS crown, and we're going to be talking about that and a lot more in this episode. So allow me to introduce this week's guest, Luke. And you can find him personally on Instagram, and you can also follow Best Retrievers at Best Retrievers on Instagram. So without further ado, Luke, can you give us a little bit of background about yourself and how you got into the world of dog training?
Hey, guys. Well, thank y'all for having me. I work for Best Retrievers, owned by Rhodey and Kristen Best. I've been working for them for almost 7 years. I got started with a dog named Colt. I started training him to hunt dove and ducks and went and ran a junior hunt test and happened to meet Rhodey there, and he offered me to come hang out with him and throw birds for him, and he'd show me how to train a dog to the next level up. And kind of one thing led to another, and I went through birds for him for a spring break, and then he offered me a job to come stay out there and start throwing birds, learn how to train dogs, and you know, here we are today.
How old were you
about? I was 18 when I met him, and then 19 when I started working for him. So I met him in the fall of 2013, and I started working for him in the spring of 2014.
So you've only been in this 7 years. That's pretty impressive,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. I got a good team, good coach. You know, I was able to kind of in the right place at the right time, and everything's kind of panned out. I've been in the dog world and the animal world, you know, my whole life. So, you know, the knowing dogs and being around them. My dad trained pointers growing up. You know, that helps out a lot. And then, you know, we're surrounded by a good group of people over here at Best Retrievers, and you know, that helps to be successful in this game.
So can you kind of break down a little bit of your history with Best Retrievers? I know they have quite a few employees and quite a few jobs. How did you start off working with dogs with them? You know, did you start off with big dogs or like obedience? And then what were you running hunt tests, field trials, derbies along the way? Talk to us a little about that.
So kind of our program when you want to become a trainer working for Best Retrievers is there's kind of one or two ways. You're pretty much always going to start from the ground up. Whether if you've won the national championship, when you come work for us, you know, the Rhodey and Kristen kind of want to form you into their way and their program. So we always start from the bottom and you work your way up. So me personally, I started working for them and I threw birds for a little bit. They had other trainers. There wasn't a training position open at the time. And so I was a bird boy for Rhodey for probably 3 or 4 months. And then a training position opened up. So I went into their internship program, which basically they give you an opportunity. They start training you from the beginning stages. And if you decide you want to stick with it and you like it and they decide they like you and they want to offer you the job, then you move into the training. But so I started working with Kristen, working with obedience dogs, puppies, that kind of stuff. She taught me their formal fetch program, which is like force fetch, but we call it formal fetch. And then I started training gun dogs to duck hunt. And then I was running my own personal dog and hunt test and learning from Rhodey on that, the handling side of things. And then when an opening came for me to start running hunt test dogs, like client dogs and stuff like that, I started training them up to run junior dogs, then senior, and then master. And then one thing led to another, and I'm running SRS and run a couple field trials. We've got a couple qual placements, stuff like that. But our main deal is AKC hunt tests and Super Retriever Series.
Awesome. Yeah, that kind of brings me to some of my other questions or some other things I was wondering about with, you know, with Super Retriever Series being kind of a combination of both hunt tests and field trials. I was curious, you know, how much time you do spend doing field trials and also, you know, what it's like to bridge the gap for a dog between a hunt test and a field trial.
We do a combination of training. You know, a lot of our dogs that are running master and stuff like that, they see what we call white coat marks or a field trial mark. And the field trials are the guys that are standing out there in white jackets. They're visible. the dog can see them from the line. There's retired guns and that kind of stuff. And we do show them white because if they can fight the factors of terrain or wind or water or old fall, stuff like that, if they can fight the factors at a long distance doing field trial stuff, then they can do that at a master level as well. So they get the combination training. We're not as much on the field trial side. They don't see it a whole lot. But, you know, our dogs that are running SRS stuff, we try to mix it in and keep them well-rounded on the HRC side of things, the AKC side of things, and the field trial side of things.
That makes sense. You got to be well-rounded. I'm sure that gives you a little bit of diversity in what how you're training, and you're not doing the same stuff every day. Not so much redundancy.
Right, right. You got to be the all-around cowboy.
I like it. I know you're, you know, traditionally more of a hunt test guy, but do you think that a hunt test dog would transition to field trials easier than a field trial dog would transition to hunt tests?
You know, it's all about the dog. Every dog's different. You will always, every dog trainer will tell you that about everything. But generally a field trial dog transitions to the hunt test game a lot better than a hunt test dog transitions to the field trial game. Because if a dog can go long, then you can get them to go short. If a dog is patterned to going short distances, you know, for a master dog, that's from, you know, 0 to 200 yards. In a field trial, they're going to go to 400 plus. And so to get a dog that's been patterned on going to short distances, say for 4 or 5 years of their life, and then you're trying to get them to go the long distances, it can be a struggle for them. It's not impossible, but it is a little bit more tough for them to do those larger concepts. If they started off in the hunt test game.
I was also wondering, you know, you've got a younger dog, maybe it's a year old. How do you decide, or how can you tell whether this dog is like more of a hunt test dog or would be like more of a field trial dog? Is there a difference in the way that that dog would appear at a young age?
For me, it all comes down to work ethic. A lot of people want to see a bunch of drive, a lot of drive, a lot of go. Some people want to see a dog that's calm and steady, stuff like that. I'm more looking for work ethic, a dog that can still enjoys to retrieve and stuff like that, but also wants to work with you and be with you and not try to do things on their own. And so a dog that has a strong work ethic, that's willing to try new things, and if you do decide to throw it a long bird, will it at least try to go out there, or is it just going to give up, turn around and come in? That kind of stuff. So you're always trying to look for every dog matures at their own rate. So you just don't want to push them. If you push them too hard and you have to back off, then, you know, that dog may get sour to harder work. Meaning if a dog is pushed too hard at a young age and they don't want to work hard for a bird anymore, then they may not want to ever do that field trial side of things. But if you can take it slow and keep them at their own pace and stretch them out or push them at their own rate, then, you know, it's never to say that a calm dog that, you know, may not be the hardest charging dog as a puppy can't end up being a qualified all age or an open level dog as it gets older.
That's really good info. I know we have, you know, quite a few listeners that might not have that, you know, fire breathing dragon, but it still kind of, you know, puts it into perspective that that dog can do great things if you kind of do it at their pace, train the dog in front of
every you. Every dog is their own pace. You know, it's just kind of like a college education. They say it's a 4-year degree. Some people do it in 3, some people do it in 5 or 6, but at the end of the day, everybody's got the same piece of paper.
Right. And I know you mentioned a little bit about ages earlier. For your dogs that are running SRS, how do their ages span?
Your average SRS dog that's going to be truly competitive at the SRS, a young SRS dog is 3. That's basically a dog that is aged out of derbies, a master level dog running qualifying level stuff. That dog's learning to be successful at that, those longer distances, those bigger, harder concepts and stuff like that. But that's still a young dog to be super competitive at 3 years old. Your average successful dog is 5, 6, 7. And I think the youngest dog to ever win the crown is 6. So it's definitely an older dog game, but we have young dogs that can do it. You know, I have a dog named Whiskey that he qualified for his first crown championship at 26 months old, but that was just kind of we went to run him just to see what he could do. And he ended up getting 11th place in his first one and second place in his second one. So it's kind of like a fluke deal. Like, man, this, you know, this is a young dog that has a whole lot of talent. But we didn't just keep running him. We backed off. We didn't want to get him test smart. We trained. And then now he's gotten to be more competitive, and he's got points on the open side and the amateur side now at just right, you know, I think he turns 4 this year. So it's all depending. It's all right. Depending on the dog. But for the most part, it takes a seasoned veteran to be successful in the Super Retriever Series.
Absolutely.
That that kind of transitions well to a question I wanted to ask, which was, you know, getting there. You know, we're talking about the ages and everything, but how much of being able to get a dog to the SRS level do you think is like the genetics or the breeding behind that dog? And how much of it is training? Like, do you think you can take a dog that might not have the best breeding and still get it to that level? Or do you think it's a pretty big factor in there?
I think there's a lot of it is breeding. You always want good bloodlines, and you want a dog that has the desire and the drive and that strong work ethic to be trainable. But not necessarily do titles on a pedigree mean that one dog is better than another. There's a dog that Colby Williams ran named Sprig, and he's got his SRS champion title. And if you look at his pedigree, it's really not the most flashy thing in the world, but he's a phenomenal dog. And, you know, that's, you know, props to Colby for raising him properly and advancing him at his own rate and seeing the best in the dog and letting him do his thing and being successful. So titles and everything like that is great on a pedigree, and it's, you know, it looks good, but at the end of the day, a good dog to a good dog most of the time makes a good dog.
You mentioned the dog that kind of got you into, you know, the position you're in now, that dog Colt. Is he still around?
Yep. Yeah, he's 7. He's got his SRS champion title and his Master National Hall of Fame title. And he does have strong – he has got a very strong genetics. He's kind of one of those dogs that he probably knew more about the retrieving side of things than I did, and he allowed me to make mistakes because he's that – you know, he's very well-bred and a very intelligent dog. So we're able to make mistakes, go back and fix them without it being detrimental to him. So – you know, that is proof that strong genetics does help, especially with somebody that's new to the retriever world.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was just about to ask, you know, how far did you end up getting with him? But you kind of answered that there. You got about as far as you can get, huh?
Yeah, he's done pretty well.
Sounds like it. You know, I was watching the SRS, and one thing that I couldn't help but notice is just how composed you guys are up there running a dog. Like, I can't remember who it was, but their dog came back and about 5 feet from them, they had to stop and take a potty break right there in the water. And it had to have been, you know, 2 minutes of that dog taking that little break. And yeah. I know that 2 seconds on the line feels like about an hour. Mm-hmm. So I know that handler had to have been, you know, just a nervous wreck inside, but you guys just maintain that composure. Do you have any advice for, you know, somebody like myself that when you're running your dog in started level, you're a nervous wreck? Is there anything I can do to kind of keep my composure like you guys do up there?
You know, everything is a routine. I come from the rodeo world, and, you know, on horses, they feel your emotions, and dogs are the same. So you want to try to stay as close to the routine that you would in training, come out of the holding blind the same way, walk to the line at the same pace, you know, keep your same stature. You don't want to, you want to try to mentally try to put yourself in training mode to where then once you get to the line, it's kind of your emotions will start to calm themselves because you're focused on keeping yourself in training mode and keeping yourself at your same routine, going at your same pace, going through your same, you know, regimen, stuff like that. So everything is more consistent to the dog like you would be on a daily basis. The moment you change something, you start walking faster, you start pulling them out of the holding blind real quick, you're allowing them to walk out in front of you. When you start to change those things is when they start to realize, oh, we're at a test or, oh, we're at a trial. And then that's when you get nervous, when you see that your dog is, oh, man, we're at a trial, and you're afraid they're going to misbehave, they're going to do something wrong. Then you start thinking negative, and then you start getting nervous. You just got to keep the same routine that you would Monday through Friday and, you know, let everything roll together.
Man, that's awesome advice. I'm definitely gonna have to try that for the next hunt test I go to, is just try to pretend it's just a training day or something.
Yep.
Talk to me a little bit about the dogs that you're training. How many dogs do you have? Like, what level are they at? Are you, when they're coming to you, are they all at like a master level per se? I'm thinking about the guy who's listening to this, and he has, you know, maybe a 6-month-old puppy, and want to know if he were to send his dog to Best Retrievers, when would it get to you?
So we have 8 full-time trainers, and we kind of have a system where we have a couple trainers that do obedience. We have trainers that do the formal fetch program. We have trainers that do our gun dog and our junior, and then our advanced level. And so most of the time when the dogs get to me, they've been through obedience, they've been through formal fetch, and they have their, either they have their junior title or they've been through our gun dog program, and they're coming to me for advanced to go on to senior, master, or however far they want to go.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense. You're not running the big dogs and then going back in to teach a dog how
correct,
to sit.
Correct. You know, we used to do it that way, but it seems to work better to where everybody can focus on their one. They have their, everybody has their one focal point, so the dog gets the best attention it can at each position. Because at the end of the day, the basics are the most important. And so if you're trying to just squeeze basics in at the end of the day after doing a big water setup, you're not getting the best out of the dog. When you can focus on the basics and then move them forward and move them forward and move them forward, you know, that's when you're pulling the best out of the dog in each step of training.
I definitely can appreciate the assembly line approach. I think that streamlines everything.
It definitely speaks volumes for the continuity of that training and that program, that, you know, it leaves zero gaps despite that dog kind of changing hands as it grows through the program.
And I'm guessing at this point, you know, you're working with some of the same people over the years, and so you kind of know where one is letting go and the other one is picking up, so it would create, I guess, a better handoff is what I'm
thinking.
Right.
We work with the same people, and then, you know, we all try to communicate in similar ways. Everybody's got their own different approach on certain things, but, you know, you've probably heard us talk about it before, but Rhodey's wife has she uses the love languages to establish, you know, how a dog's going to be trained. So when we get a dog from somebody else or we start a dog, the first thing we do is kind of identify their love language and see how, what speaks to them, you know, how we're going to get the best out of them and their training ability. And then we also work with each other hand in hand. So if we do have any questions about the dog or the training, we can always talk to each other and they'll help us. You know, we help each other work through certain things, stuff like that.
You bring up the love languages there, and, you know, you have plenty of experience with a bunch of different dogs. Do you have a preference for a certain love language from a dog? Like, do you prefer a dog that's, you know, looking for words of affirmation, or do you prefer one that's, you know, acts of service or gifts, or I don't know which one you would consider retrieves, but
a retrieve is
do you have
giving.
A preference?
Retrieve is gift giving, because the reward is the reward is the retrieve. So you're gifting them with a retrieve. My personal preference, it'd be words of affirmation. I like to talk to the dog. I like to let them know every time they do good. I like to, you know, keep them excited verbally. And then gift giving is also a good, you know, a great dog that you can work with, especially in the retrieving game. If the retrieve is enough of a reward for the dog for them to learn to do properly, to do the things right, and you'll take that piece of water or swim down that shoreline for a long ways and to get that reward instantaneously at the end of the shoreline, something like that. You know, a dog that the gift giving is, you could, because they get the reward and they understand the concept the second they get that bird. And so, you know, that's always a good positive.
Dominic, what do you think Sailor is?
Man, I think it's, I really think for her, it would be that gift giving. I think she enjoys getting to go out there, pick something up and bring it back. I think she has a lot of intrinsic value to that. I think for her, it's knowing that she did something right and getting to go pick something up and bring it back.
I dig it.
What do you think Bonnie is?
Bonnie's the same way. It's all about the retrieve for her. I mean, of course, I, you know, give her the attagirls and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, that's what she's getting hyped up about. She is a golden, so she's pretty
yeah.
loving. You know, if I she likes petting, but it's the retrieve that she wants the most.
That dog Bang that won the SRS Crown Championship that I run, most people see him on the line and see how intense and crazy he is. And for them, they would think that his primary love language would be gift giving because he wants that retrieve so bad. But in reality, if you break it down and you learn the dog and you build the relationship with him, he is a big words of affirmation and physical touch kind of dog. If he'll go, he'll swim and he'll run as far as you can to get that bird. But if he doesn't come back and you give him a good boy and talk to him or pet him on the head, you know, he's kind of like, man, did I do that right? Or, you know, and so sometimes you yeah. get a dog that's crazy and driven, but a lot of times you're going to get the best out of that dog if you use those other love languages like physical touch and words of affirmation. And I have dogs that if after they do a long retired, when they come back, I either throw them a fun bumper. Some of them I throw them a fun bumper to give them a reward and let them know that they did right. And some of them, they come to the line and I start rubbing their belly and scratching on them, you know. So just because a dog's high drive and crazy doesn't always mean that that's their love language.
Absolutely. And I think that kind of gives a nod to you as a handler. Of course, you know, you did just win the crown, but being able to recognize that about your dog and get the most out of your dogs.
I can't take credit for myself. I've been Kristen and Rhodey have, you know, put a lot of training into me just as much as we put into the dogs. And so, you know, I have good coaches that are teaching me to be that way. So
with Bang winning, did that mean he got lots of scratches?
Oh yeah.
When you guys came off the line?
Oh yeah. He got a whole bunch of loving from a whole lot of people. And Kristen, he loves water bottles. He, if you give him a water bottle, he turns into a puppy. And, After they announced that he won, we were walking away from the award ceremony, Kristen had him two water bottles waiting, and he got loving and got to play with his water bottle.
That's awesome. Yeah, I wondered how do you reward a crown champion dog? And you know, I just kind of envisioned like going through a drive thru and getting him a hamburger or something.
But, I would imagine it would be like bottle. A 16-ounce
sirloin. Oh yeah, big old T-bone.
What is the biggest struggle as a trainer you've ever had to face with a dog, and how did you kind of overcome that?
It's a tough question. I would say the biggest struggle is when a dog hits a speed bump or hits a roadblock and trying to, you know, reach into your toolbox and find the individual tools that work for that dog, because sometimes you're going to try multiple things and it's not going to work, and you're going to think to yourself, man, how's this dog going to get through this? And so the toughest thing that you come to as a trainer is you get that one kind of dog that really hits a roadblock at a certain point, and you're just trying to figure out all the different paths to get that breakthrough, to let them know that, hey, you know, this is how we're doing this, and this is it's a fun game, and you know, work through it and work with me, trust me, and stuff like that. So I would say the biggest deal is always trying to find a new approach to work through an issue and find the solution and not just pressure a dog through it.
Makes a lot of sense. Also, you know, whenever you're reaching into your toolbox, how often is it that you're kind of using your other resources and tapping into some of those other guys that you've met over the years?
Very often. You know, we have we're with Purina, and Ray Vogt and Carl Gunzer are two of our reps, and both of them are very successful in the field trial world. And so, you know, we have mentors of ourselves that we always can reach out to them every time they come to town and we go eat dinner with them. We talk dog and we learn new drills and new stuff, like new things that we can use to help better our program and better our dogs. And sometimes they do tell you something that you're like, oh man, I've had an issue with the dog and that would have been the better way to do it. I'm going to try it the next time it comes up, you know? And so you're always, the dog game is an always learning game forever. You'll always be learning. There's never an end game to the knowledge.
You know, there's something I've heard, I guess you can say, recently, and it just never crossed my mind until someone brought it up. And that's kind of the difference between prey drive and retrieve drive. And, you know, I've kind of manufactured my own understanding of the differences of those two, but is that something that comes up often, you know, in your world at that level? And if so, you know, how would you define those two things, and how are they independent from each other?
So more we see that, you're going to see that in the younger dog stage and the puppy stage, stuff like that, before they go into our formal fetch program. You're going to establish whether the dog has prey drive or has the desire to retrieve. And a prey drive is desire to go after something that's moving or go after a bird, and not necessarily do they want to go chase it, or not necessarily do they want to go pick it up and bring it back to you and say, hey, look what I got this for you. More so they go, ooh, I want to go get that. And they're either going after it just to take it down, or they just want to chase it till it quits moving and like, okay, you're not fun anymore. And so the desire to retrieve is the desire to work with you and bring you something back to please you. The desire, the prey drive is there's something that catches their interest and they want to chase it for themselves. And then that's really it. That's the end of the road for them. You know, they want to just, okay, I got it. And you can always turn that prey drive into the desire to retrieve. So that doesn't, just because a dog just has prey drive and your puppy chases a pigeon and then doesn't want to pick it up, doesn't mean that that puppy's never going to have retrieve drive.
I think that's a, definitely a good point. It's like prey, you know, a lot of people talk about, oh, my dog's a great hunter. It catches squirrels in the backyard all the time. But that's kind of like that prey drive. It's just intrinsic. That chase rewards them. It releases, you know, chemicals in their brain that makes them enjoy it and makes them want to do it more. And that's something, I guess, with Sailor, she's still a little young, and she has a good balance between her prey drive, retrieve drive. And whenever I found an issue with retrieve drive, or her not being able to, or not wanting to pick something up and bring it back, or not wanting to push through cover or water or something like that, I feel like I tend to go back to prey drive. All right, let me give maybe if it's a shackled duck or a pigeon or something that's flapping or moving, that's going to, you know, push her past whatever roadblock she's hitting to go out there and get it and pick it up and bring it back. Do you think you guys kind of use that with some of your puppies as well, where you kind of use their prey drive as a tool to retrieve drive? And you kind of said yes, but what are some ways that you guys help mold that into retrieve drive?
Definitely. So I think you're spot on with using a shackle bird or a live pigeon or something like that to increase their confidence to punch through a piece of cover or swim across a pond, because they're going to get that ultimate reward. They're going to get to retrieve, but they also get to do that prey chase and do what they really are naturally love to do. We use a lot of times, we use prey drive. There's a dog named Indy that you probably know that I run. He's 2-time team of the year in the SRS. He's an SRS champion. He's done well in all games. And when we first started transitioning him to the field trial game, he didn't really want to stay focused on the long bird. You know, when it's, you have to look past multiple shotguns and there's a long bird out there. He's kind of been, he was kind of like, that guy's way too far out there. There's another guy just right here. Just have him throw me a bird. What we did with him was we had him pick up wing clip pigeons, or we shot him flyers at that long distance, to where it got to the point where when he came to the line, the short guy, all he had was a bumper or a bird. And then he looks out there, that long guy's going to shoot me a flyer. That long guy's going to throw a live bird. I want to go to the long gun. You know, so we use that prey drive to increase the desire to want to go long.
Awesome.
That makes a lot of sense. And something that I do with my puppies, even at a young age, that, you know, not everyone has access to pigeons or something that moves. But even throwing a bumper like in my driveway, instead of just throwing it and having it land, I would have it roll to where it kind of, and send the dog, you know, while it's still rolling. So it kind of elicits that chase response that you were talking about. And it really makes sense, you know, to kind of add that in there, especially if the dog has the prey drive or the chase drive, to kind of use that to your advantage.
You know, that using that more of an exciting bounce to get them to really want to chase it all the way down.
Yeah, kind of the same thing as like when people throw a tennis ball. It's, you know, it's not necessarily stationary whenever it lands. It's still moving.
And that's what I use for a Sailor. Yeah. Usually it's either a fun bumper, or if I walk her back from the line back to my truck or something, I have a softball and a baseball on the bed of my truck, and I'll pick up one of those and, you know, toss it. And that'll be her fun bumper, because she likes that chase, and I give her the free command so she doesn't have to worry about being steady.
Yeah,
I think she likes it.
I learned using a Kong toy from Clark Kennington. He showed me that he's got a dog named Stroker. That Stroker's big reward is, he comes, if you watch him walk back to the truck with Stroker, as soon as they get up to the chassis rig or the trailer, he's looking up at the breezeway waiting for Clark to grab that Kong toy and throw it, let it bounce around like crazy. You know, so we use I use a Kong toy for a lot of our rewards.
Oh, I can see where that would be even better because you doesn't really have right. the same path every time. It's since it's shaped, yep. it's gonna kinda go everywhere.
I have a dog. I got a dog named Merle that he's just like Stroker. Every time I let him off the trailer, he comes out of the hole and looks up at the breezeway and wants me to grab that Kong toy to start the day. And then as soon as we come back, before I put him on the stakeout, Jan, he looks up at me like, you're going to grab that toy and throw it for me, right? And we grab that toy and have a little fun session at the end.
I like that, starting with the fun yeah. and ending with a little fun too. Yeah, I'm definitely – I hope that's not trademarked. I'm definitely going to start using that.
Yeah. Man, you could probably buy one of those what are they, like the rabbit target balls that you can get at Dick's for like if you were want to practice target shooting on rabbits or whatever. Oh, yeah. It bounces all over the place too.
Yeah, probably so.
I think we hit most of the questions that I had in mind. Yeah.
And then some.
Man, that's an awesome – I definitely learned a lot from that episode.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Luke, man, it was great having you on. I know you're a busy dude. And to make time for us and, you know, our listeners who are trying to become better handlers themselves, better trainers. We really appreciate having you on, sir.
Appreciate y'all. Thanks for having me. You know, if any of y'all are interested, I think Rody Best, the guy I work for, is, you know, planning on having a handler seminar within the next year or so. So that's always something to be looking out for. You can, you know, keep a lookout for that on Facebook or in our social or Instagram, any of the social media stuff. So. You know, he's the guy I learned from, so he's always one to be looking out for.
Well, I would love to come out there and do something like that. I know here it was a few months ago. I want to say that y'all had a it was like a snake bite.
Snake ripping
seminar or something. Where, yeah, man, that sounds like a really cool thing too, especially for, you know, down here in the South with all the snakes and the hot weather around dove season and all that.
It's definitely helpful.
I got one more question for you. I like throwing in like a fun question, right? If you had to compare dog training to any other professional sport, what would you compare it to?
If you consider rodeo a sport, I would compare it to rodeo. It's kind of like when you're roping a calf or riding a bull, you have to be able to read the body language of the dog, just like you would have to read the body language of that calf you're chasing or that bull you're sitting on or the horse you're riding. And so a lot of it, you know, because it's an animal and human interaction sport, you know, rodeo is definitely where I learned a lot of how to keep my composure and how to read an animal and understand behavior, stuff like that. So rodeo is definitely the closest comparison I can think.
Man, that was a pretty good out of the pocket question and answer right there. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, that you can't get a better comparison than saying, yeah, dog training is like the rodeo. I think that sums it up pretty well, actually. We definitely want to say a big thank you to Luke for making the time to come out here. We appreciate you being on our podcast and sharing your wealth of knowledge. I know, you know, I'm 24, so seeing a guy that's like my age doing the things that you're doing, it's definitely an inspiration. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners are big fans of you as well. So we do appreciate you taking the time to join us on our podcast. And for our listeners, if you guys enjoyed this episode, leave us a review, give us some sort of a rating. We appreciate that. And it helps us kind of understand what you guys enjoy so we can continue to make content that you guys are able to learn from and be entertained by as well. Also, if you guys haven't yet, check out our link tree on our Operation Gun Dog Instagram page. There you're going to see the links to all of our streaming sites, and you might find one that better suits your needs, but you're also going to see our sponsors tab. If you click on that, it's going to open up a big window of all of our different sponsors, what our discount codes are for them, and how much it takes it off you. And when you click on one of them, it'll take you to the websites. If you haven't checked that already, go for it. We got some good deals and some good partnerships cooked up. So we definitely urge you guys to take a peek at those. With all that being said, we appreciate our listeners. We appreciate you, Luke, and we look forward to having you guys come in and listen to future episodes. Thank you.
Thanks again, Luke.
Thank y'all. Thanks for having me.